How you doing, wrestling fans? And welcome to another edition of John Arizzi's Pro Wrestling Spotlight Podcast, the only wrestling podcast that brings you back 30 years with vintage audio featuring some of the biggest names of that time. This episode is no exception, and I won't give you any spoilers because we have a true one of the biggest names in the history of pro wrestling will be on the show tonight, basically defending me, and we'll get into that with Bob in just a second here. The Pro Wrestling Spotlight did cover all the news stories and breaking developments that happen in real time, and this show is going to really talk about breaking stories that were happening in my life with the convention coming up and all that. We relive all of those moments, and right here on this podcast, we will relive what was happening the week of August the 8th, 1992. Joining me, as always, the renowned pro wrestling journalist, former managing editor of Pro Wrestling Illustrated, so many other landmark newsstand magazines, Mr. Bob Smith, direct from New York. How you doing, Bob?
I am just fine. It's great to be back with you, gentlemen. And this show is going to be a little different. As I was pulling clips for this one, I'm thinking this one's going to have a tone unlike anything I've worked on so far. It's a very, yeah, very strange happenstance this time.
Yeah, it's a... I mean, talking off air just a few minutes ago, it's kind of like these shows are therapeutic in a lot of ways for me. And a lot of the stuff was suppressed in my memory. And when I hear it back, it just brings all of that ugliness back. And so this will be one of those. But joining us also direct from the province of Quebec in the city of Montreal, he is Mr. Jay Farrar. Jay, how are you today?
Guys, always a pleasure. Great to be back. And, you know, I know this is a very therapeutic day for you, John, but
yeah,
I also kind of like the scandalous stuff as well. So I'm very, 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 very anxious to hear what's going to happen today.
Yeah, it was an ugly week. Let's put it that way. And before we do get to this week's show, and we were supposed to have Jeremy Priest with us on this episode. Jeremy could not make it, and, you know, we certainly understand that, but we always appreciated Jeremy for his support as a patron right here at the podcast and on our patron page, which is patreon.com/John Arizzi. We do have so much classic content there. If you want to give it a look, I mean, just go to patreon.com/John Arizzi for $5 a month. You get this podcast several days early. You get the entire archives of the Pro Wrestling Spotlight from 1989 right through August of 1992, and of course a few more years to come. So check it out. There are levels for all budgets, and if you're in that upper tier level of $50 and $100 with your producer or executive producer, you also get to appear on this show. So we will attempt next week. We got a confirmation from Anthony Paris, the executive producer level, and he will be joining us to discuss the show next week. But let's get into this week's show. August 8th, 1992. Bob, it was a gut-wrenching show for me.
The travails of terrestrial radio. Oh. Long before podcasts, long before, you know, the internet, long before a lot of things. Can you imagine that, fans? Long before the internet. We're serious. This is, you know, didn't you have your first message board around this point or something like that?
I had a BBS service with a guy out of New Jersey who was very tech savvy, and he thought that we would be able to do these great things, and I think it lasted like 2 or 3 weeks. And he wanted to get into the wrestling business, so that's kind of, you know, I was kind of this, how can I say it? I was kind of a conduit for people to get into the wrestling business.
Oh, your whole life.
Yeah. Including Vince Russo and, you know, and yeah, and my whole life, actually. I mean, that's why I don't think as I said previously, I think I was too nice a guy to be in this crazy business. But anyway, he winds up having guests at the convention. He's the guy that brought Kerry Von Erich in 1992. He brought Kevin Sullivan in, and he was positioning himself to do other things in the business, and we had not a good parting of the ways either. And I was just getting so fed up with everything at this point. You know, it was just it was craziness financially, keeping the show on, and of course now we're going to talk about a syndicated show as well. Yeah. That I thought was going to be a great opportunity, but that I was deceived. But anyway, Bob, help me.
You used
to analyze me. Oh, DJ, help me, guys.
I can't even help myself. No, but you know, it's it's like you said the word fed up, and it's like, boy, you sounded on this one. I think of all the shows that I've gone through so far, this is the one. Jay, you probably agree with this. This is the one where John sounds fit to be tied. I don't know how else to put it. Jay, what did you think?
Yeah, it's, you know, I haven't had the privilege of knowing you that long, John, but there's one thing that I do know about you is that you're a very calm, soft-spoken, kindly man who in the weeks that we've gone over before this episode seems to have kind of turned the other cheek, endured a lot of the abuse, allowed things to kind of settle down, or hope that you would kind of settle down, and they didn't seem to. And suddenly there is only so much that a man can take, right? And sooner or later, mm-hmm. The New York Italian has to come out, right?
Yeah, so. Yeah. And this was sabotage in a lot of ways, because I had a wrestling convention in a couple of weeks, and
this is like direct treachery. Yeah, it's complete and utter. It's an all out attack on you, and you can't turn the cheek forever. And in this episode, you really said that's it. You know, that's the final straw, and now I got to do what I got to do.
Yeah. Yeah, it was not good. But I tell you one thing, what the wrestling business did teach me, even to this day, is that it taught me to get a stronger will, spine, not let people take advantage of me, and to be direct with people. And that, as soon as I left the wrestling business and 96 at the end of 96 and got into radio and sales and promotions and music marketing, that carried me, because I had a moment in late 96 when I dropped to my knees and I prayed and for just a chance to right myself and to get out of everything that I had experienced over the previous years. And I have lived to that to this day. And it really carried me through and made me successful in the music industry for many, many years. And so what wrestling did was give me a PhD in how not to do business with people. Mm-hmm. Because you really become one of them if you're in the trenches with the shit and the dirt. It's hard for you to come out of that unscathed and clean.
The key is to become hardened without stooping to the level of those that hardened you.
And you get a perception of people much quicker. You could kind of read, mm-hmm. All right, I have a feeling there's a fucking about to go on. And then you kind of like, and you turn the page. And I do that to this day. If I get a bad feeling about someone, that's it.
It's funny, John, you and I have had a similar experience. We both had to deal with wrestling people. Or we've had to deal with musicians.
Right.
And they both can be
duplicitous
and strange and untrustworthy, and you just go down the line of bad adjectives. But you got to rise above. You got to rise above and don't emulate, that's for sure.
Right. I mean, a lot of these stories are in Matt Memories, the book, and it's very detailed about a lot of these things, but a lot of these things are not in Matt Memories. Like, for example, what we're going to talk about tonight. Mm-hmm. That was not in Matt Memories, because I didn't remember a lot of suppressed memory. A lot of that sabotage that was being thrown against me on the convention was not in the book. So this episode that we're covering tonight brought so many of those memories back. And I'm like, wow, I don't remember that. And then when I heard the show, it all came back to me like it was just like yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the anger surfaced.
It's the same. It's funny thing about doing this particular podcast is that, you know, not only are you reliving good moments and bad moments you may have forgotten about. It's the same with me with all the wrestling facts and figures. You mentioned a time or a place for something, and all of a sudden, bam, I'm there again, and I remember everything about it after not thinking about it for three decades. So it's good and the bad all mixed into one big pot.
Yeah, well, we're in for a ride, guys, aren't we tonight?
Yeah, I think so. This is a strange one. I think the listeners are going to enjoy this because it's enjoy it in a not because it's a big happy joy kind of a moment, but it's just freaking strange. You know, I'm telling you guys, the travails of the wrestling business from the indies to the majors, it's all the same. It's like they will throw you a curve. They will boot you out of door. They'll welcome you with open arms one day, and then they won't return your call the next. It's the strangest business you could ever imagine.
Absolutely, and we will be playing clips, as Bob had mentioned. But if you want to hear the entire show, uncut and unedited, that's at patreon.com/JohnArizzi.
Okie doke. John, you want to start this little soiree here?
Yeah, Bob, I think I'm ready for
it. Okay, all right,
Let me take a shot of this Johnny Walker Black.
There you go. Yeah, I'm raising my cup to you, too, because we're going to
Do you have a Freudian couch you can lie back on over there?
I do, actually. I may need it.
All right, so we'll get this original Pro Wrestling Spotlight show started in earnest. This is from August 8th, 1992, and for you keeping score at home, this is show number 166. That's a lot of shows, John. You're not hardly done. That's a boatload of shows.
We're halfway there.
Yeah. Well, this is as serious as you'll ever hear, Mr. John Arizzi, and why don't we just get started with it, because he'll have a lot to say now about what happened then when we hear this clip.
Thanks for tuning in. We're WEBD, New York's Greater 1050. This edition of the Pro Wrestling Spotlight is being brought to you by Weekend of Champions 3, the world's largest wrestling fans convention, taking place Saturday, August 29th and Sunday, August 30th at the Ramada Hotel, LaGuardia Airport. And now, here's your host, John Arezzi.
How you doing, wrestling fans? John Arezzi here for another edition of the Pro Wrestling Spotlight. And we're heard each and every week on New York's Greater 1050 WEBD. A real special show for you tonight. We're going to get into a lot of great conversation regarding pro wrestling, and in particular, this radio show. So keep your seatbelts buckled, because you got some announcements tonight which are going to probably rock you out of your socks if you're a Pro Wrestling Spotlight listener and fan. So we're going to get to all the top-breaking stories in just a couple minutes with our ace reporter Don Liable. We got some great updates for Weekend of Champions. The Pro Wrestling Spotlight bulletin board service, computer service, has sponsored a number of new additions to the convention, in addition to all the great talent that we already got coming in just 3 weeks. So just keep the dial where it is, and we hope you enjoy the next edition here of the Pro Wrestling Spotlight.
So you're giving your usual hello, John, but that wasn't you. That wasn't the way you would usually speak to the fan. Yeah, you could tell.
There's a little underlying tension.
Yeah, something wasn't right.
I didn't know how to start it, how to begin it, what to say. There were so many things that happened, and it was kind of me just navigating through how do I start this off and not sound like a complete lunatic. But I have to address things that were taking place, some of which I thought were going to be great, and a couple of things which were potentially disastrous when it comes to people wanting to sabotage your convention.
But there's the thing. You were knee deep at this point with the planning and the booking. And
it was everything. A few weeks away. I mean, it was a few weeks away. I mean, the first indication of any trouble talent-wise was when Johnny Valiant pulled out because he wanted to continue a good relationship with the WWF. I had wanted Johnny to reunite with Jimmy Valiant and Captain Lou. That was one of my big initiatives, and Johnny had agreed, and then he pulled out. And so that was just part of it. But then all of a sudden, other things started to happen, as we'll hear, with some reports that were erroneous and may I even say libelous, slanderous, or whatever. I mean, it was just kind of, we'll get to it. But yeah, this was a bubbling under volcano about to erupt.
A little bit of malice aforethought, as they say.
Yeah.
A question about the Johnny Valiant thing. Were you such a persona non grata with WWF at that point that, you know, just something as simple as a reunion of the original Valiants, which were, you know, quite passe at that point, it would be a nostalgia thing. Was that considered by Johnny enough of a threat to keep him not in the good graces of WWF if he did that?
Yeah, I think because of all the coverage of the scandals and how in the forefront I was on all of that, and Johnny was lobbying to get back in there, so he might have been told something. Who knows? I have no proof of that. But, you know, sometimes I think even to this day, the things I covered 30 years ago are still kind of haunting me when it comes to doing any type of business or have a relationship with those folks there. I think it's I did something that I thought was the right thing to do back then. It was to cover this stuff as honestly as I could as a journalist. But I pissed a lot of people off 30 years ago, including the top guy, which brought back guys like Bruno and guys like Billy Graham. And, you know, a lot of enemies were brought back into the fold. But I never had that type of relationship. I never sold a ticket. I never generated a rating for them. So the animosity back then was incredibly strong. Yeah, but and sometimes I think to this day that, there could be a reason why there hasn't been more done with, you know, my archives and things like that with the WWE.
Well, you weren't the only one doing it at the time, though. You, I mean, you had Wade Keller, you had Meltzer, you had Steve Beverly, you had, geez, even us at PWI. Not everything we wrote was flattering at that point.
Right. But I was broadcasting to the public. I didn't have a newsletter that went to wrestling fans only.
Oh, I see your point. Okay.
And Wade Keller, you know, had a newsletter. He might have had 3,000 people or 1,500. Who knows? Meltzer had 5,000 readers or so. But they were wrestling fans. I was in the number one media market in the United States on the air at a 50,000-watt station. And my relationship with Phil Muchnick that developed, who was public enemy number one, who got sued by them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was a guy that, and everybody knew that I had no dough. I wasn't, you know, I wasn't an affluent guy. I was always hanging by a thread in the wrestling business. So I was just kind of this pesky housefly that you swat, like it'll land on your nose and you brush it off, and all of a sudden it's back on you. And I wasn't giving up. So, I mean, it was a constant battle for me of why am I doing this? What's the end result other than like I'm bringing to the attention of people what was going on and the things I thought were being done and being wrong. There were so many wrong things and bad things that were going on at the time in the wrestling business. And I was trying to just keep it in the forefront and educate people on what was happening.
But there's the thing again, what I call the cosmic screwing. You were so effective at what you were doing and getting the word out to such a large group of people. And the only one who wasn't benefiting from it was you. It's like you educated the fans. You had the world's biggest wrestling company mad at you. Obviously you were making a huge mark. But it didn't reverberate in terms of, shall we say, financial status.
No. Huge enough that Johnny Valiant decided to pull out just in the off chance that Vince McMahon may look at him again, even though, you know, his wrestling days were far gone by then. And, you know, he had a cup of coffee as a manager, I think, his luscious Johnny V in the 80s there. He wasn't around for that long, right? And
yeah.
Just the fact that he thought that maybe what I mean, there was no Hall of Fame at the time, so he wasn't thinking about that.
No, nope.
So just in the off chance that Vince McMahon may get pissed off because he decided to have anything at all to do with you is indicative of not only that pesky fly metaphor that you made up, but also the reach, this kind of five families type reach Vince McMahon had at the time, that he was the guy and you really don't want to get into his bad books. It's fascinating to me that you would just pull out of a show like that, which sounded like it was going to be great from you know, according to the lineup. So
it was just something really cool, because the Valiants were always my favorite tag team. Yeah. And I had done business with Johnny before. I brought Johnny into the 91 convention after I had booked most of the guys, and he begged me, "John, I'd love to be there. I'd love to be there. You know, pay my expenses. I just need a few $100 or $500, whatever it was that I gave him."
There's the thing. I mean, the wrestlers got paid at this thing. I mean, it's not like he was just coming to shake a hand. This was a payday.
It was payday, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, he turned that down in hopes of a bigger payday from his old employer.
Which he never got.
I'm not sure. I don't know. Maybe he did. I think he might have went back there for a little bit. I don't know. I don't remember.
Not after 92. There is no – he wasn't there. The only time I ever saw him again was at the Hall of Fame ceremony. I didn't see Johnny Valiant ever again. Maybe making an appearance in one of their – you know, throwbacks or, you know, old school things.
I think he managed, if I recall correctly, about 5 years. Because I remember WrestleMania 3 where he had, you know, Dino Bravo and all that other stuff.
Yeah, the Dream Team.
And then he had the other team with the cigar in the eye angle with Barry Windham and stuff like that.
Right.
So I think it was a long period, but they had so many managers then. It was like, he was about one of about eight, which is different than what it used to be in the WWF.
But I guess, he also had a very close connection to Vince. I think they went to the same military school, if I'm not mistaken, Johnny V and Vince.
Mm-hmm.
So they were tight. I mean, but who knows? I mean, that's speculation right now. But it was kind of like, why? And I just kind of knew that anything that could be done to hurt what I was trying to do was going to happen because I had enemies. You know, and at that time, Russo was an enemy. So, as we will, you know, learn more about. So there's a lot going on, you know. It was a very stressful time. All I was trying to do is make a living and sell some sponsors and do wrestling conventions that fans would flock to and get a chance to meet, you know, their heroes in the wrestling business. And then I had to deal with a lot of stuff, and this was just the professional stuff. And my personal life was just—I was gaining. At this convention was like when I see videos of this convention, me walking Larry Zbyszko into the convention area, and I look at my weight, and I see myself at almost 400 pounds. I mean, I was on the brink of health disasters as well. Back then it was and the stress was I can't even describe the stress that I was going through every week. And you're trying to pay your rent and you're trying to keep your electric on and you're trying to I was taking care of my mom. I mean, it was incredible. And all my family would be saying, get a job, get out of this, get a job. My sister would say, just get a job. And it wasn't until 1996 that I was like, all right, I'm getting the frig out of it. And then all of a sudden, my whole life turns around.
Mm-hmm.
My whole life turns around. So this is kind of, like we said, therapeutic. And, you know, I don't want to sound like a sad sack or anything like that. But this is just the reality of what I went through in the wrestling business. And, you know, even to this day, I'm like, I don't even feel like doing anything in the wrestling business other than what I'm doing right here with you guys is talking about what happened years ago. Because it's really down to the core. It's still kind of the same. There's still a lot of the same things that are going on, you know. So, you know, what's the purpose other than as a historian reliving these moments and kind of saying, my God, this stuff actually happened to me?
Well, you know, I look at what you did in wrestling as like what I did with my music career. In other words, I look back at it, I don't care about the money. It was the experience. You know, it's like, I wish I made a lot more money than I did. I did fine, but I certainly wasn't paying the bills with it. But I had 15 years on the road, and I don't regret a moment of it.
Right.
And I'm hoping that eventually you feel that same way, too, in that the quality of the work is what shines out. If you strip away your personal problems, if you look at the package, if you look at the product, if you look at your role in the wrestling business, you got a lot to be proud of, dude. You really do.
Well, I agree. I mean, I love, you know, when I look back at all the articles I wrote for all the major wrestling magazines and all the pictures I took and the films I took, and then going into the wrestling radio arena and getting the conventions, starting that up, and then in 93, even doing, you know, putting together that AAA deal to bring AAA into the United States. There were a lot of proud moments that I had in it, but the pluses and the minuses. The minuses were personal. The minuses were the financial strain, the health situation, the not trusting people, and then you start to become one of them yourself. And even when I had IWAS wrestling, you know, the agent that I was working with, you know, had an opportunity to book a show in Dallas, which hadn't drawn in years, and we got a $30,000 bought show for $30,000, and it was like, let's just do it, you know. And I wasn't thinking about what that promoter could lose, even though we had Jake the Snake and Bob Orton and Conan and Medusa and Sherry Martel and Kevin Sullivan and all these great stars. People were getting wrestling for free. They'd go to the Sportatorium for free in Dallas. So Dallas wasn't drawing flies. But here I am, you know, to make a payday, doing something where if I was really thinking about what would happen to the other person putting up the money. And I'm not proud of that moment at all. So you start to become what you're despising. And hypocritically, I mean, I was using guys like Warlord, you know, who were the biggest steroid freaks in the, around back then, allegedly. And here I am talking about steroid guys, and I'm hiring them. Even though they said they weren't on them, whatever, you know, I'm the guy, the steroid crusader, and I'm hiring guys to go on the road and do some shows. So, you know, I'm not proud of those moments. I learned from them, obviously, but that's why I became part of the problem, I think, because I was so hungry and so desperate to make money in the wrestling business that I went against my ethical standards a few times, which I regret to this day.
Well, we're going to go to our next clip now, but we don't quite get to the meat of what all the angst was about yet, because we have Don Leibel.
Right. Yeah. Donnie.
We have your lifelong friend who is the walking wrestling encyclopedia. Is that the moniker we gave him?
That's the moniker we gave him, yes.
Yeah, and also we call it the time capsule now, which was the news capsule back in the day, 1992. And he's going to give us all the hot scoops about what's going on in the NWA and WCW and WWF and global and you name it. He was there, so let's go to that right now.
Okay, back with the Pro Wrestling Spotlight, and let's bring on our reporter, Don Leibel from Utica, New York, Cooperstown, Ilion. Donnie, are you there?
And all points west. Yeah, and I'm going to tell you, your signal 250 miles away from WVD Studios is coming in crystal clear tonight.
So that's what I like to hear.
I thought I'd want to put you up on a good note there. But getting to the news right away, well, WCW is one hot promotion. Now, unless you've been in lost in Disney World or on the subway for the past week, chances are the biggest news in wrestling has already reached you. But if it hasn't, allow us to tell you that last Sunday evening in Baltimore, Maryland, Ron Simmons captured the World Championship Wrestling Heavyweight title in defeating Big Van Vader in just under 10 minutes. Now, originally, Sting was booked to challenge for the belt, but due to an altercation earlier in the evening when providing the color commentary during a match between Rick Rude and Nikita Koloff, Sting was unable to work the title match, and Ron's name was picked to replace him. Well, Sting's altercation translates into Jake the Snake Roberts, the former headliner for the rival World Wrestling Federation, made his debut at the promotion in the Baltimore arena by double DDTing the former two-time WCW champ on a chair. And speaking of the Fed, they're getting ready for their SummerSlam show to take place 3 weeks from tonight on August 29th. Now, speculation as to the site of its annual WrestleMania production is a hot topic this week as well. Originally thought to be a lock for the coming spring in Tampa, Florida's Sun Dome, now it appears that perhaps the show will be taken on the road and held in Europe. Other title news to catch up on, Alex Porteau won the Global Wrestling Federation light heavyweight title from Terry Sims, and Dr. Tom Pritchard regained the Southern Belt from Brian Christopher in the United States Wrestling Association. Also in USWA, the Rock and Roll Express, Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson have reunited, and they're already feuding with the Gilbert brothers, Eddie and Doug. Finally, some of you may not believe it. It's been a dozen years already, but it has. 12 years ago tomorrow, August 9th, 1980, in New York Shea Stadium, Bruno Sammartino defeated Larry Zbysko in a steel cage match. For the Pro Wrestling Spotlight, I'm Don Leibel. Capsule time, 11:07.
11:07, Donnie, and I tell you, you know, we go back a long time, don't we?
Very long, John.
We go back 17 years, about.
Yep.
And you've been with me since day one.
Yeah, John, I know you got something to say, and it's going to make some people very unhappy, but it's got to be said.
Well, you know, you've been with me since April 9th, 1989, when we debuted the Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio show on 1440 out on Long Island, WNYG, and were with us through our days over 1240 WGBB, and, of course, here at WEVD. Well, you know, I just want to make the announcement tonight that tonight's Pro Wrestling Spotlight show will be the last Pro Wrestling Spotlight show. And
speechless, John.
Well, you know, I was kind of speechless also this week when all this came about. But have no fear, wrestling fans, especially in this area and all over the country, because beginning next week, this show's name will be changed to the Wrestling Insiders. We've signed a deal this week with the Sports Entertainment Network out of Las Vegas. And beginning next week at the same time period, and you'll be able to hear it right here at 1050 WEVD, the Wrestling Insiders radio show, formerly the Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio show, will now be heard on the network across the country, which means that the Sports Entertainment Network has about 95 affiliates which are able to carry the program, and each week an average of about 50 stations will be covering the program. So we will be broadcasting direct from the EVD studios. There'll be some changes. We'll have an 800 number, which I'm even going to give to you right now. We have a shortened show tonight. We're leaving the airway here at 11:30 because I have to appear on the Wrestling Insider show out in Las Vegas, which is an ongoing show. Mike Tenay, who was the host of the show, resigned about a week and a half ago. And a number of people have applied to take over that program, including Rich Mancuso, who did the WFAN show here, and a number of other people. But fortunately, and I feel very proud of the fact that we were able to get that show, and we'll be the new people in control of it next week. I'll be the host of it. And, Donnie, I'm going to ask you right here on the air if you'd like to stay with me and do the capsule nationwide beginning next week.
You don't have to ask a second time.
Well, the call-in number, for those of you, and even if you want to maybe try to sneak in a call tonight from 11:30 to midnight, you could call 800. It's toll-free from now on, even next week when this show goes on the air, when the Wrestling Insiders go on the air, you won't call a 212 number anymore. You'll call this number. So jot it down now and remember it, 800-258-5834. That number again is 800-258-5834. So I'm real excited about it, and one thing we have to bring up as far as for the fans here in the New York area, at least for the first few weeks, because I've worked out a deal with the Sports Entertainment Network where I'm going to go after national sponsors for the network. Here at EVD, they're compatible with the satellite system out in Las Vegas, and we will be broadcasting from this studio. However, we are only going to be broadcasting at least the folks here in the New York area and on the EVD 1050 signal will only pick up a half hour of the show for the first few weeks until we get a couple of national sponsors on the air to pay WEVD their fee, because I'm still a time broker here at this station. What I could have done, but I opted not to, I could have rented out a studio here in Manhattan and broadcast the satellite show, the network show, but it would have put the wrestling fans in the New York area in the dark, and I did not want to do that. I want the wrestling fans here in the New York area to still be informed and still be given the real deal on pro wrestling, because in my opinion, with all the other shows that have now disappeared from the airways, the Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio show is the only show in this area where you could hear the real deal on pro wrestling, the facts, and nothing but. So, Donnie, I'm happy that you're staying with us for the capsule.
This sounded like a giant breakthrough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
John goes national. John Rizzi goes national.
Yeah.
What happened? Explain all this. Explain how it came about. This is all new to me, so I'm really keen to find out what exactly happened at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it was something that Mike Tenay, who was a friend of mine, was hosting a new show, a nationally syndicated show, one of the first of its kind. I know Jim Ross had a show that was on, or maybe the WWF had a syndicated show, but Mike Tenay was the first guy. He had gotten a deal with the Sports Entertainment Network out of Vegas to host a show that he called the Wrestling Insiders. And the show had been on for a few months, 3 months maybe. But Mike resigned abruptly, which I kind of realized, found out, you know, why. Because they weren't really very reputable or honest people. They did have a network of stations, including KVEG in Las Vegas, station out of Cincinnati, WSAI. They had a whole network. And so when Mike resigned, it was reported in the Observer that the show was, Mike had resigned and he wasn't happy or whatever was going on. And then a number of people reached out to Sports Entertainment Network, including me, to see, you know, if there was an opportunity to maybe, because of my track record and what I did and the growth of Pro Wrestling Spotlight, that maybe I would be a good host to take over the national show. And I even forgot the guy's name who I was dealing with out there. And they saw my credentials and they decided to go with me as the new host of the Wrestling Insiders. And then with conversations with WED, the satellite capabilities were there. The technology was there, even though they were rudimentary at the time, as we'll hear it next week in the first episode of the Wrestling Insiders. And the deal that I struck was basically I was going to get paid by them every week to cover the EVD nut. That was kind of, I was getting paid, whether it was a salary or whatever it is. And I promised the station, all right, so this is where you're going to be getting your money every week. But I never got one check from these people. I never got a payment. And, you know, and the EVD show had to be paid for. So it wasn't a long lasting relationship. It was only a few weeks. And then at my convention, I got a call, and we'll be going over that. I'm giving some spoilers from some of the future weeks here. At my convention, I got a call from the guy who ran the Sports Entertainment Network saying that the Wrestling Insider show was canceled effective immediately for whatever the reason was. But the reason was, which I was not told during that phone call, was that they had come to an agreement with Mike Tenay, who was in Vegas, and they worked whatever they had to work out. And Mike then continued on as the host of the Wrestling Insiders, and I got fucked, so to speak. And that's what happened. I was all excited. I was like, and they wanted me initially, leave EVD, we'll get a recording studio with satellite hookup that we could do the feed of the show. And I was like, well, that basically put the New York fans in the dark. Then regardless, WEVD was time brokered. You know, if any of this feed was going to go on WEVD on air, they had to be compensated for the airtime. So it was a tumultuous situation, and I didn't want to go into a studio, and I didn't want to put New York in the dark because I had loyalty to my listeners, and I felt that I would be able to get national sponsors, especially when I had all of these stations. So, and the other problem that happened is, like I said, all right, what stations are you on? And they gave me a DMA list, okay, which basically was, number two market, Los Angeles, all the way to number 187 market, which was in Hawaii. But the station, the DMA list that they gave me, they didn't include the call letters of the radio stations. When I got that list, they only had the Vegas station, the Cincinnati station, a station in New Orleans, and a station in Muskegon, Michigan, mm-hmm. Which was 1600 AM WSNX.
Muskegon.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm.
That's all right.
So those were the only stations that were verified to be airing the show. And so how do I go out and sell national advertisers and meet with agencies in New York City about an 85-station list when in actuality it was only four or five? So it was already like it was doomed for failure because they weren't transparent in what stations across the country other than the four or five that I mentioned were actually running the show.
One step forward, two steps back. Right. It's
absolutely
just, that's what I just keep thinking. I mean, it sounded great. The announcement you made on air was like, oh man, that sounds bad. You know, we all know who Mike Tenay is now. He wasn't as famous in those days, but those were his formation to what he eventually became on that show.
Yeah, it was the wrestling insiders and his connection with WCW, mm-hmm. and he was brought in to do the play by play for the One Worlds Collide AAA pay-per-view on WCW in 1994, mm-hmm. and then he became one of their and he was a Hall of Fame announcer, play-by-play guy in my book,
sure,
and a guy that very respected in the wrestling business and one of the and a true gentleman as well.
Yes, he was. Yeah,
he's just somebody that was so supportive of me back in the day, and so I'd got to see Mike after all of this took place in 1993 when we brought AAA to the United States in Los Angeles, and I was so happy for his success, and he was so happy that I brought the AAA in with my other partners, and so our relationship stood the test of time. And the last time I saw Mike was years ago. I had to be like 15, 20 years ago. But, and he was put in the middle of something. Or maybe he was just – maybe there was a leverage thing going on. I don't know. I don't know the true story. I'd love to talk to Mike about exactly what happened, 30 years ago. I mean, he would probably be able to fill in a lot of these questions and a lot of these details that I still don't know about 30 years later.
Really interesting. I had the distinction of having dinner with Mike and when I worked for the second incarnation of WCW magazine that Colin Bowman ran. Mm-hmm. Colin, myself, Mike, bunch of execs we went to a seafood restaurant in Baltimore, and I remember they all made fun of me because I had steak in a seafood restaurant, but that's me, but he was a great guy, very easy to talk to, very easy to get to know, and very good
at what he did.
Yeah, really good at what he did. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a natural. He's just one of those guys that knew everything and could enunciate in such a way on air that it made it easy for the listener to get into what he was talking about. I who can you compare him to? He was totally original.
He was. He was a true wrestling insider, no pun intended, and just somebody that a lot of people, I think everybody respected Mike. I don't think he had any malice or he didn't have any enemies in the business.
I've never heard anybody say a bad word about him.
Me neither, ever.
No, not even close. He's one of the two handfuls of people that you can see that never got into any controversy, he just did his job, did it well, and you were glad to have him around. Like Lance Russell and guys like that,
kind of in that category. The Gordon Solis, the Lance Russells, those types of individuals. Yeah,
the guys who became the friend in your home when you heard them on the TV describing the wrestling matches because they were on for years and they had trustworthy voices. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
It's the thing you look for in radio and audio and the way that people speak. The most successful play-by-play people or radio hosts or announcers have always been the ones who feel like they're talking to you and you only and not an audience. So, he was one of those guys. That's just how it is. It's not, it's one, like you say, it's one in a million for somebody to have the ability to, when they're speaking to literally millions of people, sound like they're only speaking to you.
Right. Yeah. And, there's the difference with the Lance Russells and the Mike Tenays and people like that, in that, like you said, Jay, you're speaking from the heart to an audience, as opposed to a lot of wrestling announcers who didn't quite understand it. And they sounded like they were selling something all the time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. A lot of wrestling announcers sounded like they were carnival barkers or pitchmen.
Sure. Well, Vince McMahon. Yeah. Vince McMahon was shameless in the way that he's like, you know, he's doing three counts on two counts. And, you know, we used to call him Convince McMahon because that's what he was trying to do while he was doing the play by play. Right. And it was disingenuous. And then you hear, you know, then you hear Jim Ross or you hear Gorilla Monsoon and they both sounded like they were just speaking to you and you felt like you knew them. Whereas you didn't feel like you knew Vince McMahon. But, you know, when he was doing the play-by-play.
Let me take a different tack because I go back a little farther.
Sure.
I first heard Vince McMahon Jr. in 1972 when he replaced Bill Caudill on WWF. He was a different announcer in his early days through about 1980. And somewhere around 81, 82, he changed his announcing style. He got more bombastic.
He took over the company.
got more bombastic and shrill and dramatic. And
yeah.
He would shout into the mic as opposed, but he was a darn good wrestling announcer in the '70s. John, do you agree or no?
Oh, I absolutely agree. I love his facial expressions when he would be interviewing, Captain Lou Albano or, you know, any of the heels and he'd hold the microphone and he'd be making these, but his play by play style was, you know, he was green of course at first, but he was the voice. Literally the voice of, you know, 1972 on. He really was. Yeah. And he was good at what he did.
But he was playing a part, right? He was playing the part of the reporter, you know, part of the kayfabe where, you know, his father didn't own the company, right? So he was literally playing a role as this journalist who comes in, who is covering wrestling for you, who's going to give you a fair and unbiased view of what's going on. And then, you know, then he saw the money that could be made. And then he started to, you know, he was Barnum and Bailey all of a sudden after that, you know.
Yeah,
so, yeah, you're right. And I've heard, you know, I've seen a lot of the old tape and a lot of that old stuff from the 70s, that weekly show that they had. And he was great outside the ring interviewing these wrestlers, trying to keep it real, trying to, you know, being disgusted in the way that they act, you know, kind of this holier than thou attitude, which was a lot of fun to watch.
He was
really sold the attitude.
Yeah. He was believable, and you know, he made some great calls. One of my favorites was High Chief Peter Maivia turned on Backlund and Arnold Skolin. You remember that television match? That didn't happen. That didn't happen. You know, he can't believe that somebody would beat the shit out of Arnold Skolin, but it was Peter Maivia who did it at the time.
Yeah,
and that didn't happen. It's indelible. I remember that call like it was yesterday. Just because I'm a kid watching at home, going, "Oh, did that happen?"
when he would do that stuff, he'd rile you up at home watching it.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. I wanted to give a shout out to Donnie Leibel in that clip. You know, I thought it was a very sweet and tender moment in the way that he stuck by you there and, you know, there was never a doubt that he was with you and he was going to stay with you. And I thought that it was a very kind and genuine moment. It struck me a little bit when you guys, you know, you asked him, it was almost like, John, you were like looking for a friend at that moment, you know, because you had gone through so much and you said, you know, Donnie, how long have we known each other? He's like 17 years, John, you know, I thought it was a very tender, genuine moment between the two of you. It was so interesting.
Well, the relationship with Donnie, even to this day, and we're much older, and Donnie was always there for me. Donnie was always whatever I needed, and Donnie would come in for the conventions and help, and even though, you know, he had fun doing it, but he was always there. He always had my back for years, and Don and I would have time periods when I left wrestling where I wouldn't talk to him for a few years, and then we'd get together and he'd always go out of his way for me and I would go out of my way for him. And that's why I always try to make him a part of everything I did with wrestling, because I know how much of a passion and a love he had for the business. And even with this podcast, you know, it was just kind of an uncomfortable situation for him technically. And I mean, you know, but Donnie to this day, I have to say, and we talked, he calls me and he sends me stuff every day on baseball. He'll send me, posts and notes, and three times a day, I get reports from the Syracuse Mets that, you know, cause Donnie covered that team. So I get all of the updates and he does it to this day. And he will make sure he calls me once or twice a week, just to kind of check in.
That's nice.
So, yeah, I mean, a kid that I knew since 1975, who's not a kid anymore, he's in his 60s, like, you know, like I am. He was and always was there for me. And these are the times. And, of course, Donnie knew what was going on all the time with me. And he knew exactly what was happening that night. He knew what I was going to cover and what I was going to talk about. And he was always grateful. And he never wanted anything for it. He just wanted to be part of it. And that's why I took him to Venezuela with me. And he was managing Nikolai Volkov and a few others under the hood as the Bug. And he was a referee for me on shows. And I would always, when I was promoting shows, I always try to get Donnie, no matter what, you're coming. You know, I'm flying you in. You could have this role. You could do this. And he was a freaking phenomenal photographer. So, yeah, I mean, kudos to Don Leibel, man. He's just an amazing individual. I'm going to be a grandfather now. It's crazy.
Oh, congratulations.
He just found out like a couple weeks ago. His son, Mark, who lives down in Bradenton, Florida, who's in law enforcement there. And so Donnie was like, Johnny, going to be a grandfather. I was like, holy smokes.
He's great because it's 1992, but he sounds like a guy who's doing a ticker like in the 1930s, you know, capsule time 11:06.
Yeah. Yep. He always had that great delivery too.
So didn't you call Donnie the kid?
Oh yeah. He still called the kid.
So basically the kid's kid is having a kid.
Yeah, exactly. The kid's kid is having a kid.
I got it right. Okay.
Like when he texts me, it was like, you know, he always signs off the kid, you know?
Yeah. Although we all know the kid is also Gary Carter, who you stole from us in the 1980s, but I'm not going to bring that up again.
Listen, I wasn't enamored with that trade.
Jeez.
I wasn't enamored with that Carter trade because that pushed my buddy John Gibbons right out of the scene there.
But you only won a World Series a year later. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I know. I was very heartbroken when they got Carter because I wanted John to be the Mets starting catcher.
Yeah, that's right, huh? That's true. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to bring it up again. I'll never get over it.
Everything happens for a reason, and Gary helped the Mets get to that World Series victory in 1986, and I'll never forget him. He was effervescent, and he was an amazing representative of the New York Mets.
He was a great baseball player. Right. He was a great catcher. You know what? I wish he was still around. That's the big thing.
Me too. Gone too soon, man.
Absolutely gone too soon.
Yeah, that's – you know that his – I know we're off topic now, but his number flies – they raised a banner at the Bell Center where the Montreal Canadiens play, and there's a 10 up there with Carter because, you know,
really? We don't
want to have a ball field. Yep.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's still there today, and they put up Andre Dawson and Tim Raines as well. All the Expos that went into the Hall of Fame as Expos. So it's pretty cool.
The Mets need to do that with his number down the road. I mean,
yeah.
They're retiring Keith Hernandez's number this week. And
yes, they are.
Cool.
And Carter was equally as important to the team back then as Keith was.
Absolutely true. The leaders of that team, for sure.
They were.
Well,
back to the drama.
Here comes the real drama. I drum roll for the drama.
We did that on purpose, John, to give you a break. That was part of the therapy, by the way. We go back to the Mets once in a while just to make sure.
My blood pressure had dropped to normal when we were talking about baseball.
All right. You got to answer a question for me about the clip I'm about to play.
Yeah.
Where was this broadcast? Where did it come from? It's only about a minute long, but it's – go ahead, John. Tell me how this all happened. Where did this come from?
There are a lot of hotlines out there. Some were free. Some you had to pay for it, 99 cents a minute. But this guy, Coach Kurt, was the preeminent guy in the New York market. And he was listened to every day with his reports by so many people. And he decided to do a report on my convention. And he said some things that were not true. And you'll hear about it. And I hate to bring Russo into this situation, but I believe that there were some conversations between the two of them before the coach gave his report that basically infuriated me because he was fucking with my convention. And you'll hear the clip and you'll know why.
But a couple things here. Number one, as big into wrestling as I was, working for the world's biggest wrestling magazine, I never heard of Coach Kurt. I don't know how I missed this. I didn't even know he had a hotline. None of it. I don't know. You know why? I didn't listen to hotlines. I was working in the business. I didn't need them. You know,
so but Bob, you know, the wrestling business is all rumor based too, you know, so people love dirt.
Yes.
People love the dirt. And it doesn't matter if 10 people were listening to Coach Kurt or 10,000 people, because once it was out there, people were going to say, oh shit.
You know what? When people say stuff like you're about to hear, it gets picked up by newsletters and people start making phone calls.
Absolutely. And that's what happened.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
Yeah. And it's a mess. It's an absolute mess. Not of your making. This was all festooned upon you and it's just awful. So you want to play this clip? It's very short. Yep. This is the actual report,
which I found, you know, right after I uploaded the show. I on the other side of the tape, it said Coach Kurt, and I played it, and I was like, that's the actual report. So I decided to play it.
Okay. Well, this is very short, but John will respond live, and he'll respond on the show. This is really good stuff in a way. So here comes Coach Kurt's clip.
Wrestling's number one fan convention for the second straight year is scheduled to take place at the Ramada Hotel at LaGuardia Airport in Elmhurst, Queens, New York, August the 28th through the 30th. Now, it's put together by John Arezzi of the Pro Wrestling Spotlight Insider Newsletter and Radio Show. A limited number of super tickets are available to fans for $75 each. I know Arezzi only by reputation, but I should give a note of caution to potential conventioneers. I am told by inside sources that many of the people advertised will not be there, and in fact, the living legend Bruno Sammartino, possibly the number one marquee attendee, will not show up unless he is paid for what he's owed for last year and is paid in advance for this year's show. WCW Chicago results after midnight.
That was, to put it in technical journalistic terms, a load of crap.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, John.
Absolutely. I mean, and that was actually that was on my answering machine. That was on my answering machine. That's where I got that, because that tone that you heard right before it started,
Someone
had played it for me on my answering machine. And I started getting calls like George Amacropoulos and, you know, all these people, what's going on? I mean, Coach Kurt said this, and I'm like, and then I started hearing from people, Russo was talking to him. I was like, it just made me incensed that here is somebody that can go out there and say things that were not true, but Bruno not showing up. And did I owe Bruno money from the year before? To be honest with you, if I did, he was paid. And he was certainly paid. I never owed Bruno a dime. This is something that Chris Cruz had harped on me about when I got back into wrestling. I did things with Bruno even after this convention. I always did business with Bruno. So I felt that it was necessary to get Bruno on the phone and to discuss this report and these allegations. But for someone to go on the air and say that and tell people that Bruno's not going to be there and many of the other guests are not going to show up, that was a sabotage to an extent that it could have hurt the convention. It could have hurt the attendance. And it certainly didn't bode well for my reputation.
John, can I speak, Frank? I'll be earnest if you'd rather.
Be frank or earnest or whoever you like.
Not only did they pull Bruno won't be there out of their asses, they also came up with this bull backstory about the money.
Yeah.
So not only were they just making up all Bruno won't be there, they came up with a backstory that's totally fictitious.
Yeah.
Enraging. Yeah. It really is. It's crazy.
It's a deliberate act. It's a deliberate act of subterfuge. It's not like, okay, you're a competitor and you guys had a falling out, so you know what? What do you do in a case like that? You don't even mention the convention. why even mention it? Just don't talk about it and go on and do your own thing. But it's like these guys have been watching wrestling for so long that they've become a parody of themselves. It's almost like he's going out there and becoming a deliberate heel. It's as immature as something that you would see on Saturday afternoon at 12 o'clock on the Superstars of Wrestling. How stupid it was. I mean, they're living out what they were watching and thought that, you know, I don't know if he thought that, I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's obviously mean-spirited. You know, there's no doubt about that. But did he think that somehow this was going to be funny, or that this was going to be kind of like, you know, like a shoot, or like, you know, we'll start adding to this storyline of this Russo-Arezzi type conflict that's going on?
No.
It's incredible to me that somebody would purposefully and voluntarily try to sabotage you like that, your very livelihood. It's incredible to me.
Well, not only that, this leads us back to Vince Russo. Were these guys in cahoots from about this? Have we ever found out about this?
That was a speculation. That was what I was told. I don't remember. It was 30 years ago. Of Russo and I at that point were, you know, mortal enemies.
Yeah.
There were things being said about me on his show every week. Coach Kurt would go on Russo's Vicious Vincent's World of Wrestling really often.
Yeah.
So, who knows?
All right.
Know?
So he hitched his wagon to Russo, basically.
Yeah, I guess he felt like he had to pick one of you, and he decided he was going to jump on the bed.
And, you know, and Russo was in bed with the WWF and getting guests and doing appearances at, you know, luncheons or dinners or whatever with before their NASA Coliseum show. So there was a lot going on, you know. And like I said, I'm not going to disparage Russo today. I mean,
regardless.
I mean, we've buried the hatchet. We talked everything out. There's no animosity or hatred in my heart for Vince Russo today, but there was 30 years ago. Of course there was. That's why it's so hard for me to even talk about this stuff. But, you know, when Bruno Sammartino was my hero, Bruno Sammartino was somebody that I idolized. And Bruno Sammartino was a good businessman. He wouldn't have showed up at my convention. He wouldn't have done these things if these allegations were true.
Well, not just this. Our next clip and what you're talking about now is going to show you what a fantastic human being Bruno Sammartino is. He didn't have to make the phone call that you're about to hear on this show. Yeah. He did this out of the kindness of his heart when you explained to him what had happened. And that's very unlike a superstar wrestler to take time out of his schedule to appear on your show to rebut that. I think it was fantastic what Bruno did.
Yeah, I do too.
What a guy. You know, Jay, if you met Bruno Sammartino and talked to him for 10 minutes, you felt like you knew him for 10 years. He was just that kind of a person. He really was. He had no caste system. Very friendly and outgoing with everybody. And he had a wry sense of humor that people don't even talk about. He could be funny.
Yeah.
And,
he's one of the people, right? He's one of the people. He's an immigrant. You know, he grew up in the big city. You know, there's a humbling factor about that that you never lose, no matter how much stardom you gain. And Bruno Sammartino always had this humility about him. That's something that I always noticed about him, that you knew he was of the people. He was that kind of guy.
He was. Miss him, tell you that.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's the last wrestling event I paid money to see. I went to the WWE Hall of Fame when Mick Foley and Bruno, among others, were inducted, and Bruno brought the house down at the end.
Oh, that was a great one.
At the Garden.
Yeah. Bruno was still Bruno at that point. He had the shaved head. He looked great, didn't he?
Yeah.
He did.
As he advanced in age, he was probably thinner than he had ever been, too, and he was still in great, fantastic shape, but he could still talk with that warm, real resonance that wrestlers don't have anymore. They just don't.
Anytime I was in his presence, anytime I shot matches he was involved with, I knew there was something. It was like, this is so special for me. Getting to meet him, developing a friendship with him. It was just kind of surreal to me because he was somebody that I idolized, you know, from the age of 7 years old. and then getting a chance to do business with him, and just being in his presence to this day. And if anybody in the history of wrestling that I covered, you know, there's only him and there's Freddie Blassie. Those are the guys for me that I was always butterflies in my stomach when I was around both of those guys.
My first column with my name on it for PWI was the one I talk about all the time. And me mock breaking up a discussion between Bruno and Larry Zbysko. Yeah. And we set that up in about 30 seconds. It was just a spur of the moment idea. I said, wait a minute. Why don't you guys yell at each other? After said, yeah, that's a great idea. You guys act like you're seeing each other for the first time in years. And here I am, like, kind of like, come on, guys, in between the two of them. And I couldn't ask for a better introduction to have my own column than that. It was, you know, Judas. Remember, he used to call Larry Zbysko Judas?
Yeah.
For what he had done to him in 82. Yes. Just classic stuff. So anyway, want to hear Bruno, the great Bruno Sammartino? This is a long clip, but Bruno's going to get to the bottom of it the way only Bruno could, and this is great. What do you hear this, guys?
Other things to talk about. I'm really hot tonight. I'm in a great mood, but I'm hot because of something that's been going on. I've been getting calls all day on my answering machine. There was a report on this Coach Kurt wrestling line regarding myself. And regarding the Weekend of Champions convention coming up, Coach Kurt's wrestling line, I'm going to call it Coach Kurt's Wrestling Lies, are saying and warning the fans on the air on that report that most of the guests of this coming Weekend of Champions wrestling convention are not going to show up. And that really irritated me because it's a bunch of lies. I've done three conventions, and I had one no-show the first year, and that was John Studd. But everybody I've booked from Ric Flair on down has always appeared at these conventions, and this year it's going to be the same thing. So who's ever spreading these lies, and I know one thing, I haven't mentioned this guy's name on the air, and he always, each week, has digs about me. He posts stories on Prodigy about me. Vince Russo posted something tonight. If you want to know the real truth about John Arezzi, call Coach Kurt's wrestling line tomorrow. So we thought it aired tomorrow. It aired today. Matter of fact, I got Bruno Sammartino, who was on this report today. They were saying Bruno Sammartino is not showing up at the convention, and I just have a call who just came in to the hotline here, and it is Bruno, and I'm going to put him on right now. Hello, Bruno, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. John?
Bruno, how you doing, sir?
I'm fine. I just came in the house, and I got your message.
Well, there was a report today on the Coach Kurt wrestling line saying that you're not coming to our Weekend of Champions convention this year, and I just wanted to clarify that with you because a lot of people call that line. It's a free line, and it really upset me. It said that most of the guests that I've booked are not coming, and it mentioned your name specifically.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know where they got that from because certainly nobody has talked to me, nor have I ever suggested anything to anybody. I'm scheduled, as you know, Saturday and Sunday, and of course I will be there. In fact, I spoke to Albano. Earlier today, he gave me a call, and he was telling me how he's looking forward to us meeting there because I haven't seen him in a good while. And he was also saying that he's looking forward to seeing people like Ivan Koloff and Nikolai. So I don't know where these rumors come from, but I can assure everyone who's listening that I've never said anything to anybody about not showing there, nor has anybody ever even talked to me about it. And I will most definitely be there. And it's a shame that people spread rumors without contacting the parties involved, because I can assure you that nobody's contacted me asking me if I was going to appear or not appear, other than, you know, the understanding you and I have to where I've agreed to appear, and of course I will.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. I know you just got back from a wedding, and I won't hold you up. I know next week on our new national show, The Wrestling Insiders, which will be all over the country, we're going to have you and hopefully Zbysko on as our first guest.
Right.
And I appreciate your time tonight, Bruno.
Well, my pleasure. I'm sorry that people just can't get their facts straight and start spreading these ridiculous rumors that in turn make a lot of people, of course, who don't know, wonder what's going on. It's a shame. But anyway, I just want them to know that there's no truth to it, and I most definitely will be there, so I know the other people will.
Okay. Bruno, thank you for your time.
Okay, John. Bye-bye.
Okay. All right, Bruno Sammartino, the living legend of professional wrestling, and how ironic that he does call in the show. I left a message for him earlier, and I'm just happy to get the facts straight there. I want to bring Donnie back on if we can do that. Donnie, are you there?
Yeah, cooling down a little bit, John, or what? You want a drink?
Well, you know, I'm really hot about this because, you know, I don't go on the show and I don't bash people. I have not responded to any of the things that have been said about me on the Russo show, and I'm going to mention it right here. You know, that's all the guy has to do. It's just he has nothing better to do than to talk about me. Now, he should just drop it. He's doing his deal. He has his Matt Rat. He's got all of his listeners. You know, if people like that type of show, fine. But he has nothing better to do than go on computer services, talk about me constantly. And I'm sick and tired of it. You know, I really am sick and tired of it. And I just wanted to speak the piece. When I heard that he posted something on Prodigy for fans to listen tomorrow to Coach Kurt when this report was on today, that leads me to believe that somebody had a hand in it. And not only him, but there's another guy who has talked and tried to sabotage the last two conventions by causing heat with all the individuals that I signed. Now, I don't know if these people are jealous, if they can't do what I'm doing, but let them all go in their own little worlds and have their fun and continue on what they're doing. But don't bother me, because I'm just here trying to entertain the fans. You know, Donnie, I've been a fan more than anything else over the last 20 years. And that's why I decided to do these conventions, because I am a fan myself. And I never had the opportunity when I was first getting involved with wrestling to meet all these stars. This is a great concept, the Weekend of Champions, for somebody to try to feed information out for Coach Kurt, for this line, which is a free line, and for people to call this and believe what he heard, what they heard today. It's a bunch of BS. And my attorneys are going to be calling Coach Kurt on Monday, as well as the carrier of that line, and we're going to get this straight. And I want a retraction, I want a public apology from them, and if they don't give it to me, I'm going to sue them.
You know, John, I think it does come down to a case of jealousy, a case of inadequacy, that they see what other people have, they want to, it's a case where they can't have it, so they don't want somebody else to. And without getting into a long, long monologue here to the fans that are listening out there, believe me, and those that know me know that my word means something more than money in the bank, that the things that John has sacrificed over the past 3 years alone, from doing a radio show to make sure the show goes on, personal sacrifices to him and his family, things that he has not gained out of all the fun that has gone into these conventions, and me always telling people how much good time I have there, meeting these people, getting autographs. We all have the fun. We all share in it. But the last 3 years, there's been a lot of heartache in it with John. And a lot of times I wondered personally, why would he go out and do it again after so much of a loss that he took, financial and personal and otherwise? But he is a fan. And I could tell you this, he has gone overboard to get these people here this year. He's taken a lot of sacrifice. And hopefully this year, everybody will enjoy the fun at the convention. And not only us, but John Arezzi will be able to enjoy the afterwards of it, of making a profit this time.
Well, I've lost the last 2 years. There's no question about that. I think I've learned from the last two conventions. I don't want to harp on it too much longer. I only have like another 11 minutes here tonight. But
hey, John, just to make a quick segue there to change the subject and give you a rest there. We mentioned, or I should say I did, and other people in the wrestling community have talked about the passing of Sputnik Monroe, a longtime wrestler down in Texas area, Tennessee. And I had a conversation last night with a fellow from the Dallas area, and he did not know Sputnik had passed away, and he is a very good friend of Sputnik. And he called me back saying that he spoke to a friend of his in Houston who had dinner with Sputnik not 3 nights ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the debate is out on that. So anybody that may know something about Sputnik Monroe might want to pass it along just to make sure.
Okay. What we're going to do now is, Don, you can hang out with me
for
the next 10 minutes
to.
Or so, right?
Love to.
I'm going to go right to the phones. And, you know, that WCW, I watched WCW Saturday night, just bringing that up first. I thought that tonight's program, the WCW Saturday night show, was the best TV wrestling show I have seen, at least since 1989. The electricity was in the air. They showed the angles with Sting and Cactus running in and Jake the Snake running in, the title change. WCW is on the right track, and I think that by January, February, this group should have a place here in a major arena in this market. They're on fire.
You know, as I was telling you earlier today, that I think right now, wrestling fans, as you were talking about Vince Russo's show and your show, whatever you like, that's fine as long as you like it. Well, I think now the same comparison, I mean, WCW and WWF, and there is no more confusion as to which is which and what are they producing. I mean, WCW to me is an athletic organization where they push athleticism. WWF is more on the cartoon side, and if you like that, that's fine. But now you have a choice of what do you want to support.
There are a lot of, you know, the millions of WWF fans out there, and hopefully the NWA or WCW will be catching up neck and neck. But there is a choice now. Whatever you like, watch it, enjoy it, and you got two great national promotions now to watch and check out every single week. And they'll give you different things, but you can enjoy both of them. We're going to go to the phones, and because we got just a limited time, I'm going to run through these calls real quick, and I want to get to the phones because this is the last time as far as using the 212 number, 212-477-5610. Beginning next week will be the Wrestling Insiders at toll-free 800-258-5834. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're first tonight.
Yeah, I have two quick questions. What do you think about the misuse of Jushin Liger and the Great Muta in WCW?
Well, the misuse of Liger is certainly disheartening because the guy's a great, great performer. He's one of the best in the world. As far as Muta goes, I get it from good sources that that this guy's going to be the NWA champion, winning that tournament next week.
All right, and what happened to the SST and the WWF?
They're there. They did TV tapings. They should be debuting on television in the next week or so.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for your call. Let's go to our next caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
All right, now real quick now. All right, so now since after SummerSlam, Rick Martel's probably got turned good. What's going to happen between him and Tatanka?
Well, I see the feud there. I really don't see Martel coming ahead in that. I think Tatanka's going to win that match.
And second and finally, now in the new Marvel Comics, Bullpen Bulletins, you see they talk about how the WCW creative staff was on your show not long ago.
Which issue was that? I have an issue in front of me that I just got with Cactus Jack on the cover. That's issue number 6 for September for Marvel Comics on your newsstand today.
Oh, it's the October issues. And it says in big, bold letters, Pro Wrestling Spotlight with Joe Argandese.
Oh, that's very nice. Well, I guess they got the initials right. I appreciate your call. Take care. Let's go to Mike.
John, my good man.
How are you?
Let me just say one thing. There's a big difference between you and Vince Russo. You ran a live remote on June 14th where I got the chance to meet Lightning Kid, Missy Hyatt, and Jason Hervey, and my friends and I had the time of our life. A friend of mine won tickets to the Meadowlands from the Russo garbage show. We were supposed to get ringside
seats.
Well,
I really don't want to trash the guy.
He stuck us in $9 seats, John.
Well,
the man is a loser. He's a fool. And you're the best. Congratulations. That's all I have to say for tonight. I'll talk to you next week.
Okay. I haven't even, I've never even allowed fans to even trash the guy on the air, but tonight I'm just in a little bit of a different mood. And I these calls are coming in randomly now. I'm not even going to screen them. I'm just going to take them. Line one, you're next.
John, how ironic. Last night on this one I was able to get through. I called you earlier. I found the cancel check. It was June 15th. So please look it up. Let me say this. That WCW has come along tremendously. If you would think back, John, just a couple of years ago, they had people like Playboy, Buddy Landell, the Ding Dongs.
Yep.
I've been watching wrestling for over 25 years. I used to meet Sam Martino and them down at the Holland Hotel.
Yeah, me too.
And it's really, this is what has brought me back to it, your show, and watching the quality that they have now in WCW.
Okay.
And I just have one question.
Go ahead, Frank.
Whatever happened to Hans Mortier?
Boy, I wish I knew. Donnie, you're the historian around here. Do you know anything about him?
Sorry about that. Hans Mortier, haven't heard a thing on the guy.
Last time I saw him wrestle was against Killer Kowalski in the Garden. He had used the guillotine, and Kowalski backed him into the turnbuckle, and he was knocked out. I always wondered what happened.
Well, I'll tell you, next Friday night I'll be with Kowalski in Boston, and I'll ask him if he knows where he's been.
Okay, thanks for your call. Next, line two.
Hi, John.
Yeah.
How are you tonight?
Who's this?
This is Mike.
Mike from where?
Bridgewater, New Jersey.
What can we do for you?
Since you're opening up the show tonight, I called that Coach Kirkland you were talking about before.
Yeah.
I have a hard time listening to his show a lot of times. It cost me some money to call his show, but not very expensive. He sometimes has his kid come on and does this real stupid commentary.
He just get his facts straight before he broadcasts something that's damaging and slanderous to somebody's reputation, and he'll get his.
I was thinking, you know, calling you and telling you, I said, no, it should be not my case of bringing this up in the air, but I see there were other people who called this line and actually told us about it, which I was really happy to see because I heard it. No way.
Straightened it out tonight, and we'll have Bruno and Zbysko on next week. WCW, in an hour from now on Channel 2, will be promoting the convention on their WCW magazine segment.
Are you going to have any live updates from the tournament tonight, are you?
Not tonight. Matter of fact, I'm recommending everybody, if you haven't called already, the Pro Wrestling Spotlight BBS service. We'll have instant results. Call toll-free at 800-685-8249, 800-685-8249, if you have a personal computer and modem. And we'll have a report next week on this show about the entire tournament and the winner. Listen, we have to run. Thank you very much for your call. Line 3, you're next. Line 4, you're next.
Hello?
Yeah, what can we do for you?
Hi, John. I just want to congratulate you on getting that job in Las Vegas.
Thank you. Who's this?
This is Phil from Brooklyn.
Hey, Phil.
And just wanted to say that I, you know, mentioned Bay Ridge and met Cactus Jack that time, and glad to see that, you know, a true fan and a true aficionado and a guy who really takes it seriously got the gig, and I'll be listening.
Thank you very much.
Okay,
I appreciate
John.
It.
Bye.
Take care. Okay, we'll go right to the top at line 1.
Hello?
Yeah.
This is Jack from Elmer's.
Hey, Jack, what can we do for you?
I'd like to know what happened to the Dynamite Kid and King Kong Bundy?
Dynamite Kid has retired. King Kong Bundy is also not actively participating in the business. We only have time for like one more call. Line 2, you're next. Hello, line 3.
Hello?
Yeah, what can we do for you real fast?
Can I ask a wrestling question real quick, please?
One quick one.
All right.
Not quick enough. This is the last call we're going to take on a Pro Wrestling Spotlight show. Who is this?
This is Paul.
Paul, what can we do for you?
Yes, I was just congratulations going to the new, you know, the...
Paul, you got to spit out a question very fast.
What happened to Killer Khan?
Killer Khan, I don't know. Donnie, do you?
Killer Khan is out of wrestling and back in Japan.
Okay, that's good. That's it for tonight already, folks. I'm sorry about this, but I got to go on the Las Vegas show. They're going to announce me as a new host of Wrestling Insiders. Please don't get upset. It's the first time I've ever really lost it on the air. I'm happy about it. Next week, we have the Wrestling Insiders debuting on the station at the same time. If you want information on the Weekend of Champions Convention, call me at 516-587-2861. And tomorrow night, our first live conference on the BBS service between 10 p.m., 8 and 10, or whatever time it is. Call this number if you want information on joining us live in a live chat mode. You can do that every week now. We'll be talking to you via computer at 800-685-8249. Donnie, thank you very much for spending the show with us. And we will be with you next week when we debut right here at 11 p.m. with the Wrestling Insiders Radio Talk Show. Until then, this is John Arezzi for Pro Wrestling Spotlight Productions.
A whirlwind of stuff going on. Your head must have been exploding, John.
It was a merry-go-round out of control. Just going, spinning.
That's a wild ride you were on, John. There's a lot going on all at once. That breathless outro was astounding.
Yeah, it was, you know, you had a limited amount of time. I wanted to take calls. I was, my blood pressure was skyrocketing. There was a lot of stuff going on at that time. And I was fuming inside.
I can certainly understand why.
What, you know, you said something at the end and you're like, well, that was the first time I lost it on air. And I think you're not giving yourself enough credit there, because you didn't lose it. You reacted as any human being would after what seems like weeks and weeks and weeks of what is literally bullying and slander. And
I wasn't responding.
Absolutely nothing about it. Yeah.
The stuff with Russo was going on every week on his show and on Prodigy, I guess, which was the bulletin, you know, their computer service. And there were a lot of things that were being brought to my attention. There was a lot of things I didn't want to listen to his show, but it was almost like, let me listen to it again and see if he, and sure enough, you know, there'd be shit said about me. And so it was festering, but I never answered it. I never discussed it. I never brought it up until this night.
Okay, now here's the question I have. Mm-hmm. You threatened legal action. Did anything ever come of that?
I met with attorneys. And they were like, you know, attorneys cost money. Mm-hmm. There's no guarantee. Cases like that take a long time to settle. So was it worth it? You know, if I was flush with unlimited money, and if a lawyer would have taken the case on for spec, I mean, and who knows? I mean, you know, who knows what organization was behind Coach Kurt's wrestling line? Who knows if they had money or if they were fly by night? It just wasn't realistic. But in my heart, I knew I had to meet with some attorneys, which I did, but it just wasn't feasible.
Wow. I mean, it was so cut and dried, though. That's the thing.
Absolutely
cut and dried. I mean, it's just, legally, to me, that sounded like a home run. But like you say, lawyers cost money. And someone in publishing, libel and slander are hard to, you know, get into court, because it's like he said, she said, could go on for months. Yeah, I mean, there you go. Yeah.
But what if you were able to prove that monetarily it damaged the convention?
Well, yeah, I mean, that was certainly would have been part of a lawsuit, you know. But here's a guy, me, who was worried about sheriffs knocking on the door in the next couple of weeks because I didn't pay my rent for 2 months.
Right.
I was getting evicted, being taken to court. So, I mean, I had other things, and I had a convention I had to run.
And pay a lawyer. Yeah, I get it.
You know, I had so much trauma going on simultaneously that you have to pick and choose your battles. And, you know, I was choosing to see if I could keep a roof over my head and who I could borrow, you know, a couple thousand dollars from, what relative will help bail me out so I could stay in my apartment with my mom. Those are things that I had to do at that time.
You know, you went through so much in that period of your life. But, you know, if we going back to this clip we just played, never forget this, dude. Caller after caller calling up said, I had a blast at this show. I enjoyed that show. I listen every week, on and on and on. You had a reach with the fans unlike very few people in the New York metropolitan area, that's for sure.
And not only that, the greatest wrestler of all time had your back.
Yes.
Think of it that way, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you can separate what I just said from all the crap you were going through, it's got to make you feel good to know that you touched people like people in the wrestling business never do.
To this day, it does. I mean, and to this day, even when, you know, the patrons come aboard and the executive producers and the people who support helping the production of this show, well, this is, you know, no way, shape, or form what I was going through 30 years ago. This is fun, you know. But they're, you know, but the people believe in it. The people who were there 30 years ago, who are patrons, who listen because they want to relive what happened 30 years ago. I always had a good connection with the fans, and the fans always appreciated what I did and the efforts that I made to kind of enlighten them on the wrestling business and give them experiences that they've never had before. And that was to meet legends of wrestling and give them bus trips and autograph sessions and the ability to talk to the Terry Funks, the Bruno Sammartinos, all of the guests that appeared on Pro Wrestling Spotlight over the years. So, yeah, I mean, that to me was the joy of what I did.
Sure. And, you know,
they just couldn't make a living from it.
Well, yeah. But again, I'm trying to compartmentalize it, I guess I should say, because people could walk up and talk to you.
Absolutely.
And there was no caste system with what you did. No. And most wrestlers didn't want to know from fans out in their personal life. They didn't want to talk to the fans. You did.
And anybody who acknowledged me or wanted to talk to me, I was made time for. I never brushed anybody off, and I will never do that to the day I die. Because it's like they're friends, you know. You may not know them like friends, but you consider them like these people, you know, you do it for them.
Well, John Rizzi, I dare say you entertained fans far better than most of the wrestling promotions did at the era that you worked. So hats off to you, buddy.
Well, I was thinking about it too.
We were best kept secret even years ago, and I think this podcast is also best kept secret.
Oh, it's a great revelation to me. Man, I wish I had access to your radio show back then as a 14 or 15-year-old. It would have been amazing because you've provided, even nowadays, some of the information that I hear, especially during the caller segments of the answers that you give, whatever happened to this guy, whatever happened to this person, whatever happened to 30 years ago, I would have been dying for that information. I would have never known. So you know, 30 years later, I'm still appreciating it just as much as I would have when I was 15 years old. And by the way, I was, for all you kids listening out there, this is what Twitter looked like in the early 90s, people doxing each other. And it just took a little bit longer. It wasn't in real time when, you know, 240 characters.
That is true. Very true.
BBS boards and Prodigy and dial-up and that fantastic sound you would hear when you first connect.
It was exciting to hear that sound while back insulting then. Each other at the same time. Yeah, it was all there.
Ancient history, it seems.
That's us.
But, well, guys, thank you for joining me for the ride tonight.
Well, I'm just glad, happy you got through it in one piece. You know, I'm sure it wasn't particularly fun reliving some of this, but it was the history of that era.
And you should be very proud in the way that you reacted, John. You're a better man than I am. You know, 30 years ago, you were still allowed to ask somebody to step outside, you know, and so, you know, you handled that with great class, dignity, and, you know, even shutting down a caller as he started to insult Vince Russo. Good on you. You know, that takes a lot of class to do something like that. So looking back 30 years later, you should feel no shame, my friend, but should be very proud of the way you reacted.
No, but I did want to call him out that back then.
I'm telling you.
And there were rumors that he was going to show up at my convention, and I was waiting for that.
I would have wished. Yeah.
Well, you know, the sad part about this, they were trying to take money out of your pocket, literally.
Yeah. Even worse.
Literally.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. It's so juvenile and so petty and just...
It wasn't fun. It wasn't fun at all. But we'll be back for another show next week. And... It'll be the Wrestling Insider Show.
As we sign off, there's one prevailing thought in my head. People are actually raving about WCW at this point in history. Your callers were raving about it.
That is right. And it's really interesting. I don't want to give away too many spoilers, but when we have Terry Funk on for an hour at WNYG in less than a month or whatever it is, because I just uploaded that one, that's some fascinating stuff about how quickly things turn with Bill Watts.
Oh, that's gonna be juicy.
Yeah. And then we got Paulie, and we have, you know, we have that's why, in a way, the NYG shows that we're gonna be going back to NYG, and it felt comfortable for me after all the tumultuous stuff that I was going through when, you know, we focus on NYG after we lose the EVD show, which people will be hearing about in real time from 30 years ago. guys, thank you so much. Before we wrap it up, why don't you let everybody know how to get a hold of you on the social media front?
If you want to get a hold of me, I'm on Facebook, the exciting name of Bob Smith, and I'm on Twitter. It's like the old George Carlin joke. George is way down on the name of names that get you laid by the sound of your name. Boo-boo. Who's there? Tito, Chico, and George. Tell George to wait. but now, I'm Bob Smith. What a name. My parents gave it to me. Thanks, Mom and Dad. They could call me Big Dick McGee or something like that.
That would have worked out. Yeah.
Bob Zaney, ladies and gentlemen. But anyway, I'm also at the Twitter box. It's Bob _ Bahoomba, BAHOOMBA. And if you want to stop by and you know, we can trade wrestling jibes and have some fun, that's fine with me. Jay, how can I get a hold of you, sir?
At the Farrar Side on Twitter, and Jay Farrar, of course, on Facebook and Instagram as well.
Excellent, guys. We'll talk to you both next week. And this is going to wrap up this edition of John Arisi's Pro Wrestling Spotlight. You can join our private group at Facebook. Just look for us there, facebook.com/ Pro Wrestling Spotlight Podcast and Radio Show. A little long, but you'll find it. My Twitter account is at John Arezzi. My Instagram account is at John Arezzi as well. For patrons out there, just go to patreon.com/ John Arezzi if you want to hear all of these shows that we discuss each and every week, unedited with commercials and everything else. Patreon.com/ John Arezzi, $5 a month gets you in the door for all the archives, and you get this podcast several days early. And then there are other levels that have audio, video, photo sets, reprints of newsletters. There's just so much there. And that's, once again, patreon.com/John Arezzi. Don't forget to check out the sister podcast, a new episode featuring the very first women's match at Madison Square Garden from July the 1st, 1972, is out and available. Matt Memories from Madison Square Garden. And that is episode number 10, available right now wherever you listen to your podcast. Check it out. Matt Memories from Madison Square Garden, co-hosted by Tim Poutre, written and researched by Richie Garcia. John Arezzi's Pro Wrestling Spotlight podcast is a production of Matt Memories, LLC. Our co-host, once again, is Bob Smith. And also joining us each and every week, doing the show editing and contributing each and every week, is Jay Farrar. And thanks to our Patreon executive producers, Anthony Pyrus and Joe Holloway, and all the patrons for your support helping with the production costs of this show. Until next week, when we relive more history with you, this is John Arezzi for the Pro Wrestling Spotlight.